a tres campesinos en dos acciones distintas. Los 1.700, concretamente son 1.764 indígenas tzotziles, están refugiados en la cabecera municipal de El Bosque y en tres comunidades más de ese mismo municipio. Están recibiendo ayuda humanitaria de diversas personas, pero ya desean regresar a la comunidad, aunque tienen temor debido a que presuntamente permanecen allí los hombres armados. Justamente ayer, autoridades zapatistas y oficiales de la comunidad de Chavajeval sostuvieron una reunión para tratar de buscar que retornen estas 1.764 personas lo antes posible a Chavajeval. Y algunos pobladores informaron que el encuentro duró 7 horas y se realizó en la cabecera del vecino municipio de Simojovel, con la participación, repito, de integrantes de la Junta de Buen Gobierno del EZLN, de autoridades del municipio autónomo y de la comunidad misma de Chavajeval, así como las autoridades oficiales de esa comunidad. La mediación estuvo a cargo del Centro de Derechos Humanos Fray Bartolomé de las Casas y de los sacerdotes Marcelo Pérez Pérez y Elder López Velasco, que son párrocos de Simojovel y de El Bosque, respectivamente. El acuerdo que tomaron, según se informó hoy, es que el próximo viernes sostendrán un nuevo encuentro para concretar el retorno de los desplazados. Y ese mismo día acordarán la realización de una nueva reunión para tratar el tema de justicia con relación a los tres habitantes de la comunidad de Chavajeval asesinados en días pasados. Me dicen que uno de los acuerdos es que los presuntos asesinos, que también están desplazados, no podrán regresar con el grupo de personas que retornarían en los próximos días, según lo que se acuerde el próximo viernes.
Bueno, quedan dos interrogantes. ¿Por qué los asesinatos? ¿Quién se beneficia con eso?
No hay claridad todavía en eso. Te explico, la noche del 25 de octubre pasado fueron asesinados en una emboscada antes de llegar a Chavajeval el presidente del comisariado ejidal, Carmelino de Jesús Ruiz Álvarez, y un comunero de nombre Mateo Jiménez Sánchez. Miguel Pérez López era el presidente del comisariado ejidal de Chavajeval y el comunero Carmelino de Jesús Ruiz Álvarez, ellos dos fueron asesinados la noche del 24 de octubre, y el 7 de noviembre fue asesinado Mateo Jiménez Sánchez. Esto último asesinato ocurrió en la comunidad y fue lo que originó el desplazamiento de las familias. No se sabe bien a bien, me dicen que la gente de la comunidad, algunos, sí ubican a los presuntos asesinos, pero el gobierno no los ha detenido y por lo tanto siguen libres. Son diferencias internas en la comunidad, aparentemente entre zapatistas y no zapatistas.
¿Y el acuerdo que está fraguándose aplicaría un poco algo de justicia para las víctimas?
Mira, el acuerdo, uno de los acuerdos que tomaron en la reunión de ayer, me cuentan, es que una vez que se concrete el retorno, posiblemente este viernes, habrá un nuevo encuentro para que las autoridades que participaron en esta reunión traten también el tema de justicia, para ver qué procede con los presuntos asesinos.
¿Y este tipo de incidentes es considerado inusual en la región?
No tanto, son más o menos frecuentes, son conflictos más o menos frecuentes. El año pasado, justamente por estas fechas, hubo otro conflicto que desplazó a miles de personas, pero fue en dos municipios, en Chalchihuitán, bueno, los desplazados eran de Chalchihuitán y Chenaló, por un conflicto de límites entre esos dos municipios.
Pero no tiene nada que ver con las actividades de contrainsurgencia que ocurrieron en los 90.
No, aquí es un problema de límites. Y en el caso concreto de Chavajeval, del que estamos hablando, son diferencias entre las dos autoridades que existen en esa comunidad de Chavajeval.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
This is Dave Lippman. I ramble all over the country, but I always return to Santa Cruz because they have Freak Radio on the air and on the web.
And that would be freakradio.org on the web and 101 FM on your dial. It's Radio Free Santa Cruz, and this is Ann Feeney, Hellraiser and Troublemaker from Pittsburgh.
This is George Shrub, singing CIA agent. I just dropped in here to say that when I'm not out overthrowing governments, I listen to Freak Radio in Santa Cruz.
Good evening, my friends. Afternoon and day. This is R. Duck here, asking you to help us find a... And coming your way next on the stream of Free Radio, freakradio.org, it's the November 22nd, Thanksgiving Day, gobbledy-gobbledy, Turkey Day. Get them goddamn Native Americans, move them along and slaughter some turkeys. We aren't going to have any turkeys, but a number of gobbling on here. People are going to be gobbling food, and also they'll be talking about life outside. We hit the line in front of the Thanksgiving Vets Hall meal, as well as the meal at the Red Church. I usually am the meal man, although I rarely get anything to eat. Well, occasionally I nibble. But stay tuned, and maybe you'll be informed of stuff you don't usually hear about.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So before we roam to the Thanksgiving Day cheer or slip into line at the Red Church, which is going to be two of the longer segments of this particular broadcast, we're going to jump back to another meal. Boy, I'm always at these meals. I guess that's where folks gather, and that's where I tend to wander. This is the Food Not Bombs meal on the 17th, which was almost a week ago, a few days after the protest at the post office, and actually in the same place, where the folks were eating and serving food. And you're going to hear some sort of comments about how the protest went or didn't go, as well as accounts of life outside and stuff of that sort. So here we go. In solidarity with all the victims of the state violence, this is a sign downtown, stop drug war, murders of food, not bomb activists in the Philippines. And actually it's a sign on the fence, the famous black wrought iron fence that was put up to guard the post office from the people, or the homeless people, the dangerous segment of the community that has to be kept at bay. Also, this was a memorial to a number of homeless volunteers who were killed over in the Philippines by, I'm not quite sure whether it was Duterte's thugs or drug gangs. It has something to do with the Duterte government. You'll hear Keith McHenry talking about it in a bit. He's the co-founder of Food Not Bombs, and this was a kind of a memorial to them, as well as a regular meal that Food Not Bombs does every Saturday and Sunday, 4 to 6, at the main post office. Go down there if you're hungry. If you haven't heard about it, check it out. It's vegan, vegetarian, and I'm told very tasty. I even have occasionally dared to sample it myself, and it's not bad. Not bad. Let's hear some more.
Says sign. Hey, how you doing, Ray? Anything you want to report?
Not really. I might get another heart attack.
Well, don't get another heart attack yet.
Well, I've had them.
Well, don't have another one.
That's why I don't want to get
all excited. Yeah, I hear you. Problems getting down to Monterey County to see adequate medical authorities?
Yeah.
And that's because what's the average wait between the buses? How long do you have to wait between buses?
One in Salinas was about 2 hours. Watsonville wasn't as long a wait. The previous time, a year and a half ago, when I went down to Monterey downtown, they lost me out in the country, and I almost died. Yeah, the company I went to, when they saw what happened, they called the bus company and said, "You got station wagons, and somebody, your drivers, was supposed to report he's injured." And he had to walk for hours. Like I say, I almost died. It was a close call.
Thank you. Well, I wish you luck. Although luck, it sounds like you need some more than luck. We've been talking with
Ray.
Thank you, Ray.
All from you,
yes. Police has no report. Anybody got any reports from the street?
From Dominic. Tweakers running rampant, morale low, things stolen, the usual Santa Cruz hustle because of the gentrification and producing of the minor crime that the police are focusing in and allowing the actual issues to just go unscathed.
Take it. Anything you've got to say?
Yes. The only reason people steal is because there's too many walls.
And we've been speaking with
Jonas.
Thank you.
Steve, no, I was talking to you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. I was saying that actually three people asked me if we could go on with the protest. And I have a guy who wants to share some ideas later about different ideas of protesting, a homeless guy. And so there were people who wanted to actually think about a permanent camp out at the post office here.
Well, it's a spot where it seems that people weren't bothered, at least on Friday morning. So, you know, that was good. If you hear anything that you actually think you're going to do it, or let me know, I'll come down in the morning and survey the damage.
All right.
And we've been talking with
Lisa.
Of course. Thank you, Lisa. Any street reports, guys? Is that a report? No. That's a cough. That's the weather.
Smoke in the air.
Yeah, there is smoke in the air. Well, I can't really... Yeah, maybe a little bit. There's a man with a gas mask, anyway. Anything happening you want to report? No hassles with police? Nothing like that? That's good.
Punks.
Ah, you're showing me your right hand, which is bandaged. What happened?
A fifth metacarpal fracture.
Oh, wow. How'd that happen?
I hit a speed bump.
On a bike or?
On a bicycle. I was doing about 10 miles an hour. I don't recommend it.
I can appreciate that. We've been talking to this speed bumpster.
Seth Bahu.
Thank you, Seth.
Remember Aubra Eubanks, everyone.
Oh, yeah. I've forgotten her for a while, but occasionally I remember her.
Yeah.
Aubra was a dancer and a librarian and a music lover and a supporter of homeless civil rights, who I knew 20 years ago, actually 30 years ago now. What do you got to say about her, Seth?
She was just a brilliant human being, and I'm lucky to have crossed paths with her.
Get your apocalypse mask here.
Take it, man. Thank you, sir.
Get your apocalypse mask here. People, enjoy the apocalypse. Get your mask.
Henry is giving out.
Enjoy the apocalypse.
Good work. Got to do it. Do it again. Do it again.
No repetition.
Grant has arrived with his bicycle. Attempting to create a local apocalypse by earthquaking the little lean-to here.
Enjoy the apocalypse while it lasts.
And that apocalypse seems to be spreading here.
Oh, my God. How did you do that? You have to go get more.
So, Grant, do you have anything to say for Free Radio regarding events you've seen in the last week?
He just said it all.
He hasn't said anything, actually. About the apocalypse.
There we go.
Enjoy the apocalypse while
it's... So, Keith, here you are, apocalypting it up. What anything specific in the last week you want to comment on?
Thursday's protest.
Yeah, well, Thursday protest was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then we got that, like, a notice in the middle of the protest that you couldn't go to the Poké Dip or any of the parks.
Well, that was a minor detail. Now, come on.
Yeah. And then, that guitar doesn't look very good.
No, it needs help.
You're going to have to get some glue.
There is no piece that I have.
And Sonny's arrived with a broken guitar.
So, yeah, and then today we're protesting the drug war in the Philippines, and this is a global day of protests all over the world. Food Not Bombs groups are protesting the fact that four volunteers were killed in the Philippines as part of the drug war. So that's November 17th. There's action everywhere in every continent.
What have you heard about the aftermath of the county, or I should say the community survival protest? Has anybody suggested they want to come back here? This is the location that you're at here with Food Not Bombs, where 25 people slept out on Thursday night and Friday morning.
I don't know. I'm getting the sense people are just living here now, but I don't know for sure. But there's tons of people always now around here. It's really cool.
There wasn't anybody this morning, I can tell you that.
Maybe not right here, but yeah. Well, it's a lot of people hanging around.
Or Friday. Well, Friday morning people were there. I was here, actually, Friday morning. But
yeah, I was in trying to suffocate in San Jose.
Yeah. Have you any more engagements that are going to be drawing you away from your key work here in town?
Yeah, I'm going to go get my root canal in Mexico City.
Mamma mia.
Got a three of them there.
You gonna dig in?
Yeah. Three of them, yeah.
Down the root canal. Into the city.
That's where the canals are, right. It's a city of canals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to go to the inauguration there. I'm going to visit with Food Not Bombs.
Inauguration of?
Of, what's his name? Lopez Obregon, the guy.
Phony leftist, you mean?
Yeah, well, he was a great mayor of Mexico City when I used to hang out there.
The guy who's palling it up with Trump these days?
No, that's the outgoing guy.
That was the previous guy, but this guy isn't much different as far as I can see. Do you see differences in his policies now that he's in power?
Well, he won't be in power until December 1st, but...
Well, now that he's heading for power.
Yeah, it's a lot different than the past presidents,
In what respect?
In that he actually has done, like, progressive things, particularly as...
Such as?
Well, he, like, really... Well, he did a lot of... The thing that most impressed me, which is a really simple, stupid thing, but that was very visible, is he set up free book distribution at all the subway stops in the city. And he did those kind of creative, low-tech things to support town people. And he was really loved by the people of Mexico City. So,
free book distribution. Anything else?
Well, he's not connected to the... to the drug cartels, at least yet.
Where does he get his funding from?
Not from the drug cartels, I don't think. No.
It doesn't seem to me like you know a great deal about this guy's background, at least in specific.
I noticed that whenever I was in Mexico City and he was the mayor, people really loved him, and it was a really great atmosphere, and it was...
Some people also liked Reagan a lot, too. I don't know if that necessarily is an indicator.
And he's been saying a lot of positive things about, you know, refusing to nationalize, you know, to sell Pemex off to
That sounds like something real.
You know, things like that, you know.
But you know that that was something he was involved in?
He's advocating that he's against it.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Recently?
As part of his campaign for president, whereas the other parties were going to privatize it. So things like that, yeah. I mean, it's like any president, he's not going to be the greatest guy in the world, but, you know, he's going to be more interesting than he wasn't in the pre and he wasn't in Pan. You know, he isn't part of the...
Okay.
I think the main thing is I think people will be really fun. And because people like him so much, it'll be a good party.
Fair enough. Well, we'll see if your words of praise are merited, shall we?
Yeah, I don't know if people... I mean, ultimately, people that get in power, you know, don't have a lot of... You know, they bend to the corporate power.
I see you're giving out masks against the smoke. Huh? Have you tried these? Are they successful?
I haven't tried them. They say people with beards, it doesn't really work, but...
People... You don't intend to shave at this time?
No, no.
I can appreciate it.
No, when I called Dr. Leff, the... head of the health department here, his first thing he said was, everybody should move indoors.
And here you are outdoors with an outdoor event.
Yeah, so then he catches himself and goes, I guess that's actually not possible, is it? So anyway, that's where that's at.
Move into your office.
And then... So we discussed that for a bit, like, yeah, we should get some places where everybody can move in while the smoke is bad.
And you found, of course, the Civic Auditorium.
Yeah, no one offered
stadium.
It, yeah, we've any county buildings, things like that.
But you're not about to lead such a march at this time.
Not right now. I can barely handle it.
You have a book to write. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah,
and root canals to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. And
probably some speeches in other cities.
Yeah, protests all over. And
yeah, I mean, there are things to be done. Leave that to those who have more time.
Yeah, right.
I'm not volunteering either.
Yeah, ex-girlfriends to, go to court with.
Yeah. I've heard about that. Anyway, we've been talking with
Keith McHenry,
co-founder
of Puna Bombs.
Thank you, Keith. Fair enough. Anything you want to say, George?
Gathering.
No, I'm good. Okay.
Oh, I forgot to tell you about the California Puna Bombs gathering. So...
I mean, it already happened, right?
Yeah, it happened. And so we reaffirmed that we are not going to apply for or accept any permits from any governments, and we're going to continue to resist the new law demanding that you apply for a health permit to feed the hungry. So we're going to ignore that.
How many people showed up?
It was about 25 people. It was Sacramento, San Luis Obispo, East Bay, two different groups in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and...
anybody from Northern California?
No, nobody else came down. No. Yeah, they couldn't make it.
How many Puna Bombs do you estimate there actually are operational in California?
I don't know, probably...
50-something.
It could be as many as 50, yeah. So
only a measly six people showed up at, well, six...
Six groups.
So
yeah.
Sounds like they're not very political in this particular era. Is that?
Well, they are political, but it's just so expensive. So here's the problem. Like, I was the only one that could come from here because everybody has to stay back cooking and serving food. So it's a real drag that, you know, it's hard to, you know, they left two people. Only one person from each of the L.A. groups could come. There's a third LA group couldn't come because she got bronchitis and couldn't make it. People from San Diego were overwhelmed dealing with the Tijuana issue that they're doing, so they couldn't make it. The Bakersfield group said they needed money to buy gas to drive to us. The Arcata group said they couldn't make it down, nor did the Ukiah group. We actually planned that weekend and the location because they couldn't come at another time and location. But when it came down to it, they couldn't come down. So that's what happens. I mean, everybody's feeding people. So.
Well, But a good time was had by all, or?
Yep. And we did an action to stop the, in solidarity with the Funapoms people that are protesting the drug war in the Philippines.
What was the action?
We just held up a bunch of signs and took picture, video, and
where?
Send it at the Omni in Oakland.
At the where?
Omni Community Center in Oakland.
No, not at the Philippine consulate.
No, but today is what hopefully San Francisco Funapoms is doing it at the consulate in San Francisco.
Yeah, good. Thank you,
Keith. There's a huge, amazing protest in Manila. I have videotapes of that. It was incredible. And they had a really, really free market. They had free haircuts. They had giant banners. It was really cool. Now, I did a media, I wrote, called all the media about this protest here, but,
they've showed up in massive numbers.
American media don't give a crap about anything.
No, I'm afraid not. Well, thank you, Keith.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a brief musical break, and it's going to be a lot of Randy Rainbow retrospective here, this particular show. I'll hope that I'll get some more songs. There's going to be an occasional song, compliments of one of our free radio broadcasters, Merlin, who comes up with interesting music and has his own show on free radio. Let's hear a little Randy first.
In a series of astonishing statements today, the president seemed to repeatedly take the Russian leader's side over that of
the Washington Post reports this afternoon that a woman is alleging Roy Moore.
President Trump squares up symbolically against Kim Jong-un, saying he's got a personal message.
Whenever I'm just too depressed to deal.
Another tumbling domino rippling through Hollywood.
And the quote-unquote fake news is much too real.
Things are about to get very, very weird.
I exercise the stress inside my brain and take a much-needed panic-induced medicated stroll down memory lane. I miss manageable scandal, the kind that I could handle without a lot of vodka and a Xanax haze. Good old innocent fluff, like that Watergate stuff. Yeah, those were the good old days. I miss Iran-Contra pardons and presidential hard-ons, when political commotion felt like just a phase, like Barack's disrepute for the wrong colored suit. Ha, 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 ha. Those were the good old days. I pour me some tea and then turn on my CNN, at least while my patience will allow.
We have more breaking news.
Yeah, I can. Remembering the simple things like tax fraud and whiskey rings, and wondering where's Anita Bryant now. I miss her. I miss Hurricane Katrina and Anthony Zawina and that darling girl, Kim Davis, when she came for gays. Wasn't that cute? For Dan Quayle's potatoes, John F. Kennedy's hoes, yeah.
Effective at noon tomorrow.
Oh, I want to apologize to everybody.
We begin tonight with Donald Trump Jr. and his secret correspondence for months with WikiLeaks before the election.
I miss moderate decorum. Oh, I miss Rick Santorum before all the sleaze and Huckabees and dossiers. I miss Saddam Hussein. I Miss Monica Stain. Those were the good old days. I stand in my shower stall, drinking more alcohol, and dream of the good times we forgot.
And
when hope was inside of us, and all that divided us was, did O.J. do it or not? Even Mel Gibson seems charming again.
I miss her.
I miss him too.
Aw.
I miss Hillary's emailing. I might miss Sarah Palin. Back when all the greatest punchlines were Tina Fey's. Now the punchline's this butts, and the jokes are on us. I miss the good old.
And that was Randy Rainbow, The Good Old Days. The original song that he's parroting is, of course, from Damn Yankees, for all you musical fans, from the 50s. And the video of it is more comprehensible, funnier, and worth checking out. I encourage you to check it out on YouTube and check out the rest of his stuff. Of course, I always do when I play these. You're tuned to the stream of free radio, freakradio.org. I'm reminding you, $300 can be yours if you can send us information, which helps us obtain either a studio space, 10 by 10, access to electricity and internet, and a bathroom, and or a transmitter site, which is essentially a place where we can put up an antenna. For more information, go to freakradio.org. And leave us an email or give me a call at the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line at 423-4833, which is also 423-HUFF if you have an ancient phone with letters on it. I guess phones currently do have letters, don't they? The ones that people clitter and clatter and use for all kinds of other purposes. Anyway, back to the Food Not Bombs meal and memorial for the... Well, also protest against Philippine government repression and the killing of Food Not Bombs workers in the Philippines. But, of course, these interviews are mostly about what's happening in Santa Cruz, which is what really interests me.
All right. This is a gift from, I guess, the higher power. My foster parents went into the courthouse and pressed charges of the Rangers, taking my belongings, and it was worth almost $38,000.
And what court are we talking about?
I don't know. I think it was the big court, because my foster father is a lawyer, and my jail came back to me.
What came back to you?
Everything I had taken from me from the top of Santa Cruz Mountains.
And how did this reappear? What actually, when did it reappear?
This evening, and I'm trying to pick up most of it together. My parents are bringing it to me. It's like almost $3,000 of gear.
Now, did they get it from police agencies, or did it appear from on high?
It came from a ranger, off-duty ranger.
Really? And do we know the name of this guy who's finally fessed up?
Scotts Valley. He works up in the Scotts Valley area.
Well, that sounds like good news, Lawrence.
Yeah, it's a good news, but better news is I work for the downtown street team.
And that makes you feel good.
Yes, I like to clean up Mother Earth.
Even wretched sidewalk Santa Cruz.
Yes, sir.
Anything else you want to add?
No, just make sure everyone knows it's not our heart. It's just wait. It will come back to you.
Well, you're telling them.
Yes, I do.
And
I can show it right here.
And I'm standing next to a bike, a number of backpacks, a sleeping bag.
My tank, my tent, all my food.
And all your food. When was it taken?
About 6 months ago.
Well, I'd be wary about eating that food.
No, it's all brand new. It's my parents made sure it was all good.
They're good, Lawrence.
Yes, they are. The Lord is higher.
Well done, and have a good night.
I'm going to try to.
All right, man.
And unfortunately, most of the stories you're going to hear, or other stories you're going to hear on this audio in the days that followed, indicated not just ongoing theft, homeless on homeless, but also, if at least one person's account is accurate, a deliberate form of entrapment and deception by a combination of rangers, cops, and Take Back Santa Cruz helpers. I don't know if this is accurate. You'll be able to judge yourself. But there has, of course, been attacks on homeless people by the police chief on the beach. That's Andy Mills, you know, the great liberal who is going to suspend the sleeping ban and not use the ordinances for closing the parks to accomplish the same anti-homeless get out of town, you can't sleep here purpose, but in fact drove people off the beaches, directed them to the Depot Park, and then by reports from at least three different people, when they got to the Depot Park, they had their property confiscated and or thrown away by Parks and Rec crews. So it's pretty serious charges, and apparently there's one individual said he was going to send me a video of that, which should make interesting viewing if that happens. Also, there are reports from Steve, an individual who's been living outside and who I've played on this program a number of times, about how he is, what he did was he went over to the Homeless Lack of Services Center and observed vehicles being towed away from in front of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And that, of course, is one of the first areas in town where they put in no parking at all on any of these streets except by permit, and no permits unless you're a resident, which, of course, is a way of destroying, in a very thorough way, public spaces in a very targeted way right next to the Homeless Lack of Services Center and the adjacent streets, Lime Kiln and Fern Streets, as well as Coral, where the Homeless Lack of Service Center is situated. Anyway, here's more from the Who Now Bombs meal, and you might want to go check it out today. I should say Saturday or Sunday, which happens every Saturday and Sunday, every weekend, 4 to 6. So chow down, and also use it as a contact point for people to get together. That's one of the things we discussed recently at the Conscience and Action meeting, which happens every other week at the Sub Rosa Cafe. And you can actually, if you come at 11 o'clock on Wednesday, you're sure to bump into either a Conscience in Action meeting or a HUF meeting. HUF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Conscience in Action is Conscience in Action. And we talk about, at least in the last few months, we've been talking about and planning actions for and actually doing actions about things like the closing of the bathrooms, which as an obvious anti-homeless action over at Loudoun Nelson, and maintaining closed bathrooms in San Lorenzo Park, or reestablishing closed bathrooms, which is what the city has been doing. I'm not aware they've opened them. They were supposed to reopen the park, remove the fences. Not aware that's happened either. The fire danger, of course, has lessened considerably, and particularly in the parks that are... Well, I would say certainly in San Lorenzo Park, I don't know, with the rains, it would seem to me, again, a naive fellow, maybe the rains will increase the fire danger. We can learn that from the wizard experts. I'm not aware that's the case. Anyway, there seems to be maybe it's just a Thanksgiving occasion, you know, clean up the town, remove the unsightly homeless, and some of which are drug users, some of which are pretty wretched, some of which are, they're really poorly dressed. There's no question about that, for heavens. During the Thanksgiving festivities so that people can, you know, feel they're living in a progressive, upscale, caring community, when that, of course, is far from the truth, at least with regard to housing homeless people, keeping commitments to even let them have campgrounds, or even to enforcing and allowing the law to be enforced around the rights under the Constitution not to be harassed for sleeping when there's no shelter space, which there never is for the overwhelming majority of homeless folks in Santa Cruz. That can't be repeated too many times. And, of course, it's consistently and constantly ignored and then lied about by the chief of police. And it appears that the Tony Elliott, the new Parks and Rec guy, is going along with this wretched program. Although I haven't spoken to him, I haven't heard from him. I sent him an email requesting some answers and haven't gotten any. Even our progressive council, and it looks like Drew Glover and Justin Cummins are quite possibly going to be two of the three victors, along with Donna, whose last name I don't remember at the moment, although all the results aren't in. But I've yet to hear any expressions of concern from these folks. They didn't attend the protests last Thursday, a week ago, and they are... Well, I have to say it, they're politicians, so that to me probably spells doom to begin with. But, you know, I'll be making my usual appeals and demands and requests, and we'll see what they say, and we'll see, more important, what they do. Back to dialogues at dinner.
Yes. Robert Perala.
And Robert, you've just given me a very gripping minute-by-minute description of events up in the Paradise Fire, but that's covered a lot by the newspapers. I'm not the personal kind of side that you gave me from your friend, but I tend to do the local beat. Anything happening here that has struck you?
Well, even though we're 4.5 to 5 hours away from the fire, people in Santa Cruz can make totally the difference. It's just by being present and being committed and looking for efforts that are happening here for the people of Paradise. In my own case, you know, I try to be very consistent in my relief work, because the results are found in consistency and momentum, and then also getting used to the idea. A lot of people are just turning on to relief work to help the homeless. In this case, we have the homeless from the fire itself. So you have people owning nice homes that suddenly the table has turned and they find out, oh my God, I'm now a homeless person. And they're looking for resources, food, shelter, clothing, some kind of support system. So it's mediums like yours that put the message out. It's about showing up and suiting up. And Food Not Bombs, which is what we're at right now.
Santa Cruz, when there was an earthquake, homeless people who had previously been homeless were treated quite differentially and differently than those who had lost their homes in the earthquake. That is to say, they were the last to get shelter. Yeah. They were the first to get kicked out. Is that happening up in Paradise much?
Well, it's a different set of circumstances in some ways. The earthquake was a very different kind of displacement than the fire. In this case, a fire is very sudden, like an earthquake, but in this case, the people were displaced in many different ways and couldn't find a way out. And also, you know, when nightfall came, there was a fantastic amount of confusion, as there always is. But for the most part, while 85% of the homes are gone, and while there's only, depending on the figures you listen to, as much as 18 commercial structures still there, you know, people are finding their way into Durham, and Chico.
How far is this town, let's say, from Sacramento?
Paradise? Paradise from Sacramento is about 2.5 hours.
And it's went to the north, northeast?
It's actually to the northwest. Yeah. So it's well up there, you know. And, yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think you can do anything you want in Santa Cruz to help people. It's just about, you know, are you going to be a champion for the people? And I think it's a great thing.
And so do you. So you get into it. You too can be a champion for the people.
Absolutely. I think it's what you know. What there's a natural, instinctive thing that's built into our spirit that says we need to serve. And if we don't, we feel incomplete. And I know a lot of people from my hospice patients and other people that I visit that are needy, homeless or hospice, physically impaired, that don't wait. today, you know, you might be a healthy person. You can show up, and you'll be. And if you ever were homeless or disabled, you'll know that you showed up, and it's a great thing to do. If you can't, we understand that. We all have families, but if you can, hey, be a champion for the homeless and support things like Food Not Bombs and the People of Paradise.
And maybe survival campsites here in Santa Cruz.
Absolutely, without question.
It's getting colder.
The campsites here need help. In fact, I'm going to help a homeless person deliver their gear over here underneath the bridge. But it's really time
that
we show
illegal
up.
Under the bridge. You're helping an illegal activity.
That's right. Well, that's the way it goes.
You're just a criminal, aren't you?
You know what? You have to do something illegal to be a good person these days.
Shocking. And we've been talking with
Robert Perala.
I think this is Bill Elliott in Santa Cruz, and this is one of the best venues that there is in the city. So I'm here to enjoy.
And you're certainly munching away. There's no question about it.
Oh, this is excellent. These guys are gourmet.
All right.
Here's an article in the mid-November San Jose Mercury News. After police used tear gas, suspect found dead under home. Officers went to residence Wednesday night after a woman called to report her boyfriend had assaulted her. A domestic violence suspect who barricaded himself inside an Almaden Valley home for about 14 hours overnight Wednesday, a couple Wednesdays ago, or at least maybe last Wednesday, twice resulting in police deploying tear gas in an attempt to force him out, was found not breathing and later died at a hospital, San Jose Police Chief Eddie Garcia announced Friday. It was not immediately clear if the tear gas was a contributing factor to the suspect's death, Garcia said Friday at a news conference. We're still wondering about that. I guess Trump is wondering if the Saudi Arabian prince had something to do with the death of Khashoggi, the Washington Post journalist who was dismembered in the Saudi Arabian embassy in Turkey. Wondering goes on. The Santa Clara County Medical Examiner Coroner's Office will determine the man's cause of death, a process that could take weeks. And, of course, by that time, who's going to care? However, Garcia said police had reason to believe the suspect, identified as 51-year-old Mark James Spencer, may have been under the influence of narcotics at the time of his death. I see. So, really, it wasn't their fault that they killed him if they did, because he was under the influence of narcotics. And he was, anyway, probably a bad guy, you know, so let's move on. The ultimate cause of his death, quite honestly, was not him not coming out of the house, Garcia said. But those chemical agents that are introduced are meant to be an irritant that absolutely assist us in preserving life. This is a real quote, believe it or not. In this case, the subject refused to come out, and that was ultimately his demise. So it was his fault that he didn't come out because the toxic gas that the police sent in was simply an irritant, you see, that any reasonable person would have come out. Man, goodness knows why he didn't. Probably some kind of a junkie or something. Or maybe he was afraid of being shot. I don't know. Not with the San Jose police, no. Garcia said tear gas is not considered lethal force, is widely used in the law enforcement community, and has safely ended many confrontations. Of course, he doesn't give the stats about how often it's resulted in any fatalities, or he doesn't deny or doesn't claim it has never resulted in fatalities. Since December, the San Jose Police Merge Unit has responded to 8 incidents and used tear gas on 3 occasions. The decision to use tear gas during a situation was made by the chief. The situation unfolded about 9:15 p.m. Wednesday when a woman called police to say she had been assaulted by her boyfriend in a home on the 6700 block of Elwood Road, located near Amadon Expressway, south of Camden Avenue. When officers arrived, they learned Spencer, quote, was not going to be cooperative and had 2 outstanding felony arrest warrants for domestic violence, assault with a deadly weapon, and terrorist threats, Garcia said. Police also learned Spencer was known to be in possession of a handgun, even though prior convictions barred him from possessing firearms, Garcia said. Patrol officers surrounded the house, called for Spencer to surrender. At one point, Spencer momentarily stepped out of a side door, refused to comply with the officer's demands, and walked back inside the home. We aren't learning anything about any kind of dialogue that went on. There are no other witnesses being quoted or cited in this article by Jason Green and Mark Gomez, but I continue. Eventually, police called in their specialized units, including their MERGE, also known as the SWAT team. All efforts to verbally convince the suspect to exit had failed, and after approximately 14 hours, instead of officers entering the residence and forcing a possible armed confrontation, chemical agents were introduced in an attempt to force the suspect to come out. A short time later, officers entered the home and heard movement beneath the floors. They ordered the suspect out, and after no response, police used another round of tear gas. Officers eventually went beneath the home and found Spencer unresponsive, that is, dead. Officers provided CPR and first aid to Spencer. He was taken to a hospital. He was pronounced deceased at 12:35 p.m. Thursday. Well, maybe he wasn't dead when they took him. City Councilman Johnny Comas, who represents a district including Almaden office, said his office has received dozens of complaints regarding the house where the standoff took place. He said neighbors have complained about drug dealing and other criminal activity. We've had problems with this house for more than 4 years, said Comas, adding he had worked with police and the Santa Clara County DA's office to remedy the issue. There was a lot of illegal activities, drug dealing. The neighborhood was up in arms, several times. Comas said neighbors also did their part, provided police with license plates of vehicles associated to the house that would come and go. Prosecutors and homicide detectives are investigating the death. The case is being monitored by the police department's internal affairs unit, the city attorney's office, and the independent police auditor, who I'm not sure if they, I think by this time they've, the previously independent auditor has, I'm not quite sure how independent she or he was. Auditors, I've always found, generally are much weaker than police review boards, which are all themselves very weak because they don't go about subpoenaing police and doing their own investigations, but tend to take it from the cops and then see if they have to cross any T's or dot any I's. Anyway, this was after police used tear gas, suspect found dead under home. It could be, you know, perfectly legitimate kind of police action, but I mean, I notice again the lack of any independent reporting. Well, there is some mention that they're telltale things, like they pull out this the drug history. They pull out. We don't have any witnesses or any kind of comments from the relatives of this guy. I don't know. Anyway, you have it. You can make up your own mind. You hear my bias, which is pretty blatant. I'd like to see one more independent reporting, and also, I guess it's, you know, you can't expect police to wait forever if it's been, as they claimed, what? How many hours did they wait? Having trouble finding it in the story. 14 hours is a long time. I don't know. This concern with officer safety when you have all these bulletproof garments, and he hasn't. There's no indication that he showed a gun. The fact that he may have had a gun. So they push in gas that could be. Well, they're claiming, in a way, inferentially, that he really killed himself because he declined to come out, indicating they knew that if he didn't come out, it was likely to kill him. And that's maybe one of the reasons that they feel the gas is effective, also because it probably feels like shit, so to speak. Anyway, that was that for our defendant, or our suspect. And we don't know who was responsible for going into who were the actual killers in this case. The gas men who killed Mark James Spencer. The police chief is given the ultimate responsibility, Eddie Garcia. But there, I don't know if he may have been on the scene, but I suspect it was. I doubt it was the police chief himself who stood there and released the gas.
Welcome back. We are joined now by America's UN Ambassador, Nikki Haley. Ambassador, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Many of us are perplexed, to say the least, by President Trump's recent UN address, particularly the ominous threats he made to, quote, totally destroy North Korea. What the hell was that?
Well, I think what you saw yesterday from the president was he was being honest.
Maybe that's why we didn't recognize it.
I know that, you know, people and countries don't want to hear it, but here is a man who continues to threaten our allies. He says he's going to destroy the United States to ashes.
Yeah, but enough about Donald Trump. Let's talk about North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, who the president has been taunting recently, both on and off social media, with the nickname Rocket Man. Do you really think that's a good idea?
I will tell you that, look, this is a way of, like, you know, getting people to talk about him, but every other...
He always takes to Twitter just to grumble, grouse, and gripe. He's having fun, but Kim Jong-un is not the playful type. I'm slightly more than panicked that this schmuck is gonna wipe us off the map by acting like a baby. He's playing cat and mouse, but he's the mouse among these men. He fires up his fan base with his talks at the UN. I'd rather he behave more presidential, but again, he's acting like a tiny little baby. And though I know his followers are thrilled, he's gonna get us killed. How do you solve a problem like Korea? How do you sleep when missiles start to fly? How do you not have constant diarrhea when all of our lives depend upon this guy? Many a name you know you'd like to call her, but certain things are better left unsaid. 'Cause how can you do the trick with childish rhetoric? Can two tiny men have such big heads? Ooh, how do you solve a problem like Korea? When you're crazy, dotard.
Dotard.
Dotard. Dotard, I'm sorry.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself. The United States is ready.
Kim Jong-un saying he takes President Trump's threats personally, so he has been rattled.
They will be met with fire and fury,
the likes of which this world has never seen before.
Oh, Jesus.
How do you solve a problem like Korea? How do you get them not to drop a bomb? How do you calm their autocratic leader?
Just tell him his hair looks dumb and go, your mom.
Trust me, that shit always works.
Why does your mouth have constant diarrhea?
Silic insults that have apocalyptic results. Just tweet him and say, hey Kim, your ass is bad. So,
oh, how do you solve a problem like Korea?
And by the way, Rocket Man should have been handled a long time ago. Little Rocket Man.
Girl. No.
Rocket Man.
Dotard.
And that was, of course, How Do You Solve a Problem Like Korea? A satire of the Sound of Music song, How Do You Solve a Problem Like Maria? It was a year ago, at least, the fire and fury threat by Fuhrer Trump. And since then, of course, there have been peace negotiations, peace talk, and some peace actions, mostly between North and South Korea. Although, here's a bit from the antiwar.com website, U.S. South Korea to scale back spring exercises. Though officials had previously been threatening a return to large-scale military exercises in South Korea, the Pentagon has once again agreed with South Korea to dramatically scale back a major exercise, in this case, the spring 2019 war games. This is Full Eagle, which is usually one of the major Korean war games for the U.S., and usually a big source of tension with North Korea. According to Defense Secretary James Mattis, it will be scaled back enough that it won't threaten ongoing diplomacy. This may prove controversial, as General Robert Abrams has recently told the Senate that the reduction in war games was degrading the readiness of U.S. military forces inside South Korea. Between that and some not being on board for North Korea diplomacy in general, this may see some resistance from our rocket heads, as I might like to call them. It is unclear how the U.S. and South Korea decided to scale this particular exercise back. How they did it. Though usually such actions have come at the behest of South Korea, who both has more to lose from foiling diplomacy and has made side deals with the North to prevent any incidents fueling tensions. And there's also two Koreas connecting the DMZ road. Since the 1953 armistice of the Korean War, all roads within the demilitarized zone, DMZ, have been severed. On Thursday, for the first time, that was, I guess, last Thursday. Since then, a single road will be reconnected by the two Koreas. South Korean officials describe the road as unpaved and in Gangwon province. The two sides will coordinate on this first road connection as part of recent deals to improve tensions. The Koreans remain technically at war, you know, since 1950. I mean, how ridiculous can you get? I guess it's a lot of fun and games and profits for the military-industrial-congressional complex that is getting huge amounts of money and profit out of all this. But not particularly for the Korean people, who would like to be reunited, I imagine. But since I'm straying from Santa Cruz, let me stray up to the north. And let's listen in on an interview I did a couple of days ago with Jim, who is with the successor to the First They Came for the Homeless encampment. It actually is one of the First They Came for the Homeless encampments, which is right next to the fenced-off area, which surrounds the area where the First They Came for the Homeless used to be. And this encampment, actually they called themselves Here There, the First That Came for the Homeless encampment in this place. The First That Came for the Homeless, of course, gets its name from the speech by Reinhold Niebuhr, who in Nazi Germany famously said something or wrote something like, first they came for the socialists, but a socialist, so I did nothing. First then they came for the, you know, the gays, but I was not gay, so I did nothing. And finally, when they came for me, there was nobody to do anything. First they came for the homeless. Here's Jim talking about what's going on up there. Sounds like an improving scene with campgrounds making connections with each other, which is something I suggested happened down here in Santa Cruz. In fact, that was one of the topics we discussed at the last Conscience in Action meeting yesterday, and probably be talking about it at the next HUF meeting on Wednesday, which is coming up on the 28th, I guess it is. So check us out at the Sub Rosa at 11, between 11 and 1, and join in the discussion or come and see what we can do to make sure that people who are outside don't freeze out this winter, don't get driven away by police, don't get involved in or be ravaged by a hepatitis A epidemic because of the closing of the bathrooms and the refusal of the city to provide elementary sanitary services, sharps containers, etc. Let's listen in to this interview.
So it's about 20 to 3. That's the sound of the BART train passing by. And I'm walking along the, gosh, I don't know, is it iron? Some kind of metal painted black, I don't know, 7 foot high fence with spikes on the top of it, which used to be the here, there. First they came for the homeless campground, and still, in the cloth letters, it's here and there, is posted on the fence, and then inside there are large, I don't know, 10-foot high word here. Even as I walk along the path, I see colored tents between the path and the roadway, Adeline Street. This is no trespassing, no camping. Here in our presence is a gift to give thanks. There's the chalking on the sidewalk. 13 tents I count so far, 14, 15, and more. 16, 17, 18, 19. First they came for the homeless, a large banner on the fence on the other side of the sidewalk.
I'll put this down so I'm not distracting those outside.
No problem. Now I'll come with you and sit in the chair because I'm tired. So this looks like the living room here.
We have two living rooms. This is the smoking living room and non-smoking.
I got you. So we're talking with?
My name's Jim Squatter.
Hey, Jim. How long have you been with First They Came for the Homeless?
Since we were down at the post office, I don't know.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
And I was here, I don't know, what, 2 months ago, maybe, like briefly here before, and I guess that was around the time when authorities dumped one of the other protest encampments from the city hall. And that was a couple of, about 2 months ago, 3 months ago.
Right, right. Okay. Well, since then, those people came here. What's more exciting now is we've started to network with the other camps that are in Oakland, and they filed a temporary restraining order similar to what we did, the village in East Oakland. And so now they have the police backing off in Oakland. And we're in network with another encampment that's out in West Oakland, and they were harassing them, and all of a sudden now they're sort of backing off from that as well. And so it looks like the temporary restraining orders get them against all the cities. It seems to tie them up, at least for now.
Now, is this after the Martin versus Boise decision?
It's subsequent to that, this filing is. Ours was before that ruling had been issued as a final ruling. So I think now both our judge and probably the judge of this new case, who I've heard is a much more progressive judge than our judge.
His name? Your judge's name?
Our judge's name is Judge Alsop. Their judge's name, I don't know. I can't.
Alsop, the milksop, or would that be inappropriate?
I think he's a Clinton appointee. He's fairly supposed to be, you know, left of center. He's a Ninth Circuit.
So was Jesse R. Green, but look at him.
Exactly. But this new judge.
Jesse R. Green is the so-called progressive mayor of Berkeley. And he's anything but progressive, but particularly notorious because he made a lot of noises sympathetic to homeless people in order to get elected. But ain't that always the way?
Seems to be much more progressive, and he's seems more activist. He's saying he's going to issue a ruling in 2 weeks on the TRL as far as if it's going to go to trial, which is much faster than our judge acted on it. The other thing that's really interesting is this is in state court. A state court has given back a homeless person their vehicle that was towed in San Francisco for tickets, etc.
I think I heard about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so now there's some RV dwellers in Oakland had their vehicles towed. I believe Ocean Newman here at the law clinic.
Mm-hmm.
has taken some of those cases on, I believe. So it could be that maybe in East Bay we can get the same thing where, look, if you're homeless, and they can't tear your house away.
Well, I know that, I guess it was, I'm thinking of Amanda, an activist who was with the kind of the, I don't want to call them the wharf vehicle folks, but folks who, whose vehicles are parked down.
Oh, and yes, yeah. I don't think I can say this on the radio.
Okay, hang on, we'll go off for a record here. There goes that part again, hang on. So, it's Jim?
Jim.
You told me that I'm Robert again. Entire campus situated right next to this elevated Barrier Rapid Transit train line, which provides regular conversational breaks, if you will.
Tell me that there, your connections with other camps, this camp's connection with other camps, may ultimately result in the not-too-distant future with the takeover of the site both for ground camping and for vehicular camping.
We're working towards that. We don't know how it's going to turn out at this point, but it is definitely one of our goals. We've been talking to another encampment and another nonprofit on two different sites that we're looking at possibly taking over. Take care, Ron.
So, how many camps, I know it's hard to estimate, but first of all, how many camps do you have connection with now? This first, the camp for the homeless camp. Thinking it over.
Six or seven.
And are these both wet camps and the clean and sober camps?
Yes. In fact, eight camps, yeah. What we've found is that the camps that are the most well-organized seem to be clean and sober camps, and that's spreading as an idea now.
Of course, wet camps, terminology that I first heard when it was used with regard to rainbow gathering encampments, which happens, well, the main rainbow gathering happens once a year, and there are smaller rainbow gatherings, which are sort of a countercultural gatherings. In the United States, they go to different states each year, and people come from all over to gather and meet and spend weeks together in one of the national forests or some such federal land. Wet camps are places where people can go who are alcohol users or drug users. Now, dry camps are places where it's understood you aren't to use those kinds of substances during the duration of the time you're there. So,
but people are starting to realize, hey, if we have these rules, then it makes this more functional. Also, people are starting to really understand the parts of anarchism where if we work as a functional group, it's much better than a king of a leader or, you know, any of the other various malformed styles that come out.
You mean you're not a Stalinist?
I would say not. Emma is my saint, Emma Goldman.
Emma Goldman. You and the Kronstadt sailors, eh?
Yes. And the Machnovis.
Ah, yes. What about somebody from the 70s or 80s or 90s? Do we have any new heroes?
At the intellectual level, he's been around forever, but Noam Chomsky still is doing a pretty good job of running.
I'm voting for Clinton Chomsky, that guy.
I didn't catch that one. Sorry.
He said, Noam, I'm voting for Clinton Chomsky.
Well, okay. I think he's a fool for that, but whatever.
It wasn't so much that he voted for Clinton as that he urged others to vote for Clinton, and he campaigned
worse.
But, you know, he saw Trump as the worst alternative, although...
You know, I've been an anarchist since the early 80s, and each time a right-winger comes to power, some of my newer anarchist friends are like, no, but you've got to vote this time, save the nation. I'm like, no... I don't think that's probably what's going to do it. So I'll keep my vote to myself, thanks. But I think if we work on this other stuff half as hard as we work on that stupid electoral shit, we'd already be there.
What kind of work is being done to further connections between camps? Do you guys have meetings? Do you have contacts?
We have both, in fact. Every Friday at the Omni, which is an anarchist collective of collectives, big building here in Oakland, we have a meeting at 6 p.m., reaching out to the other camps.
Open to the public, or?
Open to the public that lives... Open to the public that lives sans domicile.
Outside.
Yes.
What about housed but sympathetic would-be reporter?
Reporters, it would be okay to be at the meeting, but we don't want you to record it because we're planning direct actions frequently, that sort of thing. So it's we like friendly media, but just don't blow us up.
Take it. So this is a kind of relatively new development. This connection between the camps has only recently begun, right?
It really started when this camp used to be on the other side of where the fence is. When they chased us out of there, we realized, look, if we set up multiple sites, we're more flexible if they hit us at one or two of them. So we've had Old City Hall here and Aquatic Park that we set up all simultaneously.
City Hall was removed, but Aquatic Park remains?
Yes. Although it's less, it became a wet camp. So they're struggling with those issues.
You're still maintaining connections with it?
Yeah, we send food and, you know.
You still have meetings with the Omni and otherwise?
Oh, the Omni, that's a series of meetings that's been going on now for about a month and a half or so, 2 months. And our main contact now is the village, which has evolved several times. They had a negotiated deal with the city that the city welched on in Oakland. And so...
tell me about that if you can.
It's pretty well covered in the East Bay Express and online, but basically they set up a camp with the same type of rules we did, and the city of Oakland kept dumping homeless people there and pushing homeless people there to be, you know, they had several fires, they had a dead person, you know, somebody had a dude in their tent, that kind of thing. They died for some reason in their tent, but wasn't discovered for days. These kinds of problems, because they just kept... So some of the original people that started that have found this new site in East Oakland and filed the TRO. And so that is a good step, you know. Also, I forgot, there's a camp done by Lake Merritt that we did some demonstrations and artwork and stuff to back them off. There's one out in West Oakland, Wood Street. Familiar with Mutiny Radio over in the city?
Tell me about it.
Mutiny City started out as a pirate radio station, and I think they are streaming now also. And they may have got, I think they still may have a unlicensed, you know, transmitter.
I know San Francisco Liberation Radio used to be around in the 90s.
Yeah. I knew Radio Free, and I knew, what's his name? The guy was making a little trance.
Dennifer.
Yeah, Stephen Dennifer. No, I haven't seen him in forever.
I haven't either. I think, remember when I last saw him.
Yeah.
So, you were kind of itemizing the camps and possible future actions that are coming up. Anything coming up that you want announced on the radio? This will be broadcast on the stream of free radio.
At the moment, but I'm telling you that there's going to be a very broad movement that now is legally establishing the right to exist. That's what I call it. With these temporary restraining orders, with the vehicle stuff, you start to put these pieces together, and it's like, look, don't mess with us. We have the right to exist. Go find a crime and fuck with those people.
I've noticed a lot of tents, a number of individual tents around Berkeley, just sort of the different spots along Shattuck or side streets. Has that become more prominent since September 4th when that decision was announced?
It wasn't. Boise affirmed it, but we knew about Boise before it was listed, and there was another case down in L.A., and so in our TRO, we said, look, man, this exists in law. Let's start to enforce it. These people have a right to shit, to piss, to eat, to sleep, to do what human beings have to do to survive.
Even to cook.
Yeah. Yes, to cook. Well, that one was easy here in Berkeley. They would have put in no cooking on the street, no flame on the street or anything. I pointed out, I'm one of the people that helped organize what became the famous flag burning case that went to the Supreme Court.
Tell me about them. 1989?
The demonstration was 84. I think we got into federal court.
Missed some of that. Go ahead.
We got together through the post office, but we knew each other, for some of us from Occupy, some of us from different movements, and I think Mike Zinn was the person that really said, I'm going to make this about homelessness. We're all fucking homeless. And homelessness had not had traction as a movement for a long time. I was skeptical, but we did a good job, and we've resurrected it now, I believe. Well, I don't know so much as we've resurrected it, but the fact that there's shitloads of people with no place to live, I think resurrected it. Yeah. You get out of L.A., I mean, fuck, there's something like 75,000 people on the streets of L.A. I mean, it's a whole city in itself.
And you've been with this particular set of tents for the last couple of years at least?
Yeah, I went up to Oregon last year to go check things out and realize, you know what? Portland, it's expensive. There are a lot of homeless people. I was hoping to find a cheaper city. And yes, it was cheaper, but not cheap enough for me. And so I ended up essentially back here because of health problems and stuff. I had to come back for health care here. I'm going back up that way.
Any reports from Portland of any kind?
In Portland, there's some really interesting models. There's a group of homeless people that started out from Occupy, actually, and they got harassed and corralled, and eventually they landed on this piece of property that nobody quite knew whose, kind of like we did over there, whose property was it. And
you're not talking about Dignity Village or Dignity.
Yeah.
Because that was, long before Occupy, actually. They started that in 2002.
Dignity Village, it's the one right by the train tracks. It's Meg and
something for us or something.
It's Hazelnut Grove. It's called Hazelnut Grove. And they're just a group of homeless people that came together, got pushed around, went through all the kind of shit we did, and then finally found the spot, and now they have a tiny home village that's really all independently built and done, and with solar and showers, and they have their act together.
How many people are involved?
That actually live there, I'm guessing about 30, maybe 35, 25 to 35, someplace in there.
You don't get hassled by the cops much?
Sure. They're like us. They're well past hassled by the cops. They're in negotiation with the city about how to, we want utilities. They're not sure they want them there. But it's all negotiation, no police action. In fact, for a while they did have plumbed water from a neighbor, but my guess is something went wrong. But, I saw there's a whole bunch of things. And Eugene, they have a program. I'm assuming it's a non-profit homeless program, but it's run like a restaurant. You go in, you get seated, they come and bring you food. It just doesn't have, the menu is limited. But yeah, they have servers that come around, refill your water, and bring you more food if you want seconds.
I think they've got in Portland too, as I remember.
Oh, I
at least it was 15 or 20 years ago.
Well, see, I found up there St. John's something or other. It's a store, but there's no cash register. It's all food that's been donated, and they're open like 4 days a week, and you just come in. There's limits on what you can take, like take, you know, unlimited some stuff, other things. We only have this much, so take this many of this. But I would say that you could do 80, you know, if you had a family and whatever, you could do 80% of your shopping there for free.
Anything like that in Berkeley?
Nothing like that in Berkeley. Nothing in the Bay Area that I'm aware of. What else did I see there? Yeah, there's a lot of cool models around the country of what's going on. Places now, I think in Southern California, are sort of the cutting edge of RV life and living in a vehicle life, because LA. Gotta have a vehicle. But they were the first people I know that got vehicles returned through the courts. They had been taken, and they're now trying to set up sanctioned parking, living spots. Churches are talking about, we're talking about land, etc. Another cool model, as far as it's really functional, I like it, is Loaves and Fishes in Sacramento. And that's a great program as well. That's the best one I know of in California. So as far as...
Well, you have the quarter meal here.
Yes, you have quarter meal. But if you're disabled and trying to get a meal in Berkeley, it's hard work, man. You have to get... You know, every day it's a different church, a different location, halfway across the city from each other. It's not convenient.
Is Newman Hall anymore?
Newman Hall, and there's other churches, you know, and there's the youth center, and you get a meal there, but there's not like St. Anthony's where you can go breakfast, lunch, dinner every day, the same damn place.
In San Francisco.
Yeah. There's nothing like that here. It's higgledy piggledy all over town, one day a week, a meal, you know, figure out what the schedule is, where you got to get to.
I'm going to wind it up, but give you the last word as to whatever you think we haven't covered that we have covered, but you want to emphasize. And also, I guess First They Came for the Homeless has a Facebook page, right?
Yeah. So does this camp, is neither here nor there. We have Facebook.
Under what name?
Neither here nor there.
Neither here nor there.
Yep.
Okay.
Named after the famous here there.
You're neither here nor there. You're just across the tracks from here nor there, and here and there, here or there.
Exactly. So we're neither here nor there. And then there's First They Came from the Homeless. And we're starting to set up websites and stuff, because who knows what's next, but I think we may have to get the hell out of here to find housing.
Because?
Well, as it burns down here in California faster than they're building it, and we already have this deep deficit, I'm thinking that housing might be a distant memory here for poor people. We may have to go to someplace else and hack it out of the forest and make our own home.
And we've been talking with
Jim Squatter.
Thanks, Jim. And my apologies for the rather wretched sound quality on that, not just the BART train, but the fuzzing out of the voices. I'm going to try to deal with the distortion. Let's turn now to a little musical break, and I'll be back.
Is planning a rousing and impressive military parade to roll down the streets of Washington, D.C. this fall.
The Capitol Steps now bring you this sneak preview. First to fight, show a might. This parade is lame, all right. Yet the army is going along. Trump would join us for sure, but his bone spurs are too sore, so he's sitting as we march along. Then it's hi, hi, hey, the army will obey, bringing our tanks right down the mall. Though they may look great, all the potholes that they make have just swallowed D.C. City Hall.
Troops on display for Trump, troops on display. Farewell to foreign wars, we're showing off today. We can stop all backlash, and here is how. Why don't we use that cash for feeding all our homeless vets right now? Blunder flying high into the sun. This is dumb. What is the point? We wonder. Bunch of boys showing off guns. Down we dive, spouting our flames from under. But the crowd is very sparse. Trump just wants fame. He'll go down in flames, but nothing will stop this latest hair farce.
From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, we are trained to fight all battles, not parade around D.C. First to fight for right and freedom.
Army!
Navy! Air!
Marines!
We'll take part in Trump's recital. It be singing the latrine.
Barely.
And that was the Capitol Steps, Trump's military parade. Now we're going to listen to a little more from the Red Church from last Monday. These are sort of early November interviews. Well, I guess it's actually mid-November, but less than usual. Let's listen in.
The Meriwether, a.k.a. Open Mic, covering for John Martin on his lack of shelter announcements, but he said everything else.
So we're here inside the Red Church, and Mike, you say that there is news of a kind.
Well, yeah, Salvation Army's got a shuttle running around. One pickup spot is at the end of Felker behind Denny's.
That's the day and night storage.
Right, next to the day and night storage, which is also good, FYI.
The other spots are what, the Homeless Lack of Services Center on Coral Street?
Right, yeah, that. Yeah.
And Metro, maybe? I'm not sure about that one.
Yeah, there's flyers available and a phone contact and a name.
Okay.
And this is with reference to the 60-person 7th Avenue shelter, which is available nightly if you happen to get there before it fills up. It goes around picking up people different from last year. I guess people had to assemble at a spot, or you could walk directly to the shelter on Laurel Street when it was there at that Salvation Army. This year, the neighbors apparently have fussed it away so that the Salvation Army is not willing to do the same kind of shelter. Rumor has it they're going to be doing a women and children shelter starting in December. I'm not quite sure the details here, and I'm hoping to get a report on that for the next show, perhaps. In any case, there are three stops, apparently, that this bus makes. I don't know the exact time it makes. I think it starts around 4:35, and I hope to get a schedule before the next show. But call me if you have such a schedule, and I'll put it on the air, 423-4833, or say rather the stream, since we aren't yet restored to the air and still looking for a transmitter site.
Some people are being sheltered, but many are not, and are soon, I mean, could become homeless. There could be more homeless and fewer sheltered, but at least there's some. Something that's good is happening.
Not much, actually, but that's a thoughtful thought. We've been listening to...
Harriet.
Of course. And, of course, this was before...
Meriwether, a.k.a. Open Mike. Grateful to be with Bathrobes Pierre, a.k.a. Robert Schnorless.
And we'll leave that here, there, everywhere.
Cool.
Street reports.
Beautiful now, as it always has been.
Thank you, sir. Anything you want to say for us?
Us?
Everyone. For yourself.
No. I love us.
I know nothing, but looks like you're at the head of the line anyway, right?
Yeah.
I'm glad we're here.
You're here now.
Anything from the street you want to pass on?
Not a new thing today. You know, it would be the same thing all over, the same. Every day, the same thing's happening.
That's true. At least generally seems
so. The freezing cold, the attitude, it makes it even more uncomfortable.
And we've been talking to, if you want to say who you are.
Oh, Blanket is talking to.
In other words, your name is?
My name, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby.
Hey, bro.
Yeah, you have a nice night.
Oh, the same to you.
Any reports from the street?
They found a dead body on Plymouth and Highway 17.
In the culvert, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that day before yesterday.
And
if anybody knew his name or who he was.
I haven't heard yet, and I see nothing in the papers, so I'm wondering about that.
Yeah, that's all I got.
You want to say who you are?
Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, man. Ray, any comments? Anything you want to say?
This is the worst winter I'm going to face in my life, I hope. I hope it doesn't get any worse than what I'm facing.
How was last night for you? Where were you? Where were you last night?
Outside, getting wet.
Wet? Really?
With a lot of moisture.
Dew.
And all the stuff is too moldy to sleep on tonight now.
Well, stay alive if you can, if you want.
If I can.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, thank you.
Any reports?
It's getting colder.
It is. Is it? You would know. I don't. I'm indoors.
Hi, everyone. Hi.
Any reports? No? Anything for free radio you want to say about what's going on outside? Stuff like that?
I would go sleep and safer.
Any hassles with police, tickets, problems?
No.
Sounds good.
Yeah, one slammed me into the wall. Then Capitola, illegally.
And you
want to... Treated my arm and my back.
How long ago?
Last week.
Last week?
Yes.
Wow. Amazing.
Got it. I'm in trouble about it.
You want to, anything more you want to say about that?
There was a false accusation that he made and was very outgoing, and I don't like it. And rude and very violent and not right. And some people against the wall don't cut it. And did to John, too, being an idiot.
Thank you. We've been talking with
the same batch, you know, in council.
And you are, what's your name?
Kathleen Hicks.
Right on. Thank you.
The police shut down the people camping on the beach in front of the boardwalk. Do you ever hear anything about that?
I heard that they had come back and they were there for a week. What, have you seen them there gone recently?
No, I was one of the people down there. And the police chief himself came down.
What did he say?
And he said, you have till tomorrow to get all your stuff or we're throwing it in the trash and you're going to jail.
How long ago was this?
Day before yesterday.
Interesting. This is the main beach?
Yeah, the police chief himself told me that. He's
well, hey, you should be honored, man.
Right, right. He told us to move to camp behind Depot Park. Back there is where he told us to move.
Behind Depot Park?
Yeah.
He actually told you where to go?
Yeah, exactly where he said to go.
Are you going to do it, or what do you think?
No. I don't believe anything he says.
You don't believe Andy Mills, our police chief?
Yeah. So they arrested me back there, too? Yeah, right.
That's possible, yeah. Anyway, been talking with...
Michael Scrumpf.
Thank you, Michael. In a later report, which I picked up today at the Thanksgiving meal, was that people were being driven away from Depot Park
almost as soon as they arrived, and their property being taken by Parks and Rec crews. I don't know how accurate that is, but it certainly was a grim report. Might not be able to get to it today. I'm running short of time, but I'll put it on Sunday if I don't put it on today. A brief story in the Sentinel does note that Ernest Nash, 73, of no known address, was found unconscious in his vehicle at the Gateway Plaza. That's one death. I don't know if it's homeless or not. They administered Narcan to him, according to the Sentinel, a drug known as Naxalevon, to reverse an opioid overdose. And then there was another body found, and I actually saw this guy being hauled out of the culvert at Plymouth and Ocean Streets downtown. That was several days ago, body of a 39-year-old man. And again, they claim that bottles of Narcan were found in the immediate area, along with a syringe, a sharps container, and a various personal belongings. The man's identity is being withheld until relatives are notified. If you know of him, you want to give his name, if you want to talk a bit about him, give me a call at 423-4833 about either of these guys.
Anything?
The Salvation Army meal, and then I'll do it.
We'll talk again.
Okay.
The people that are doing the Take Back Santa Cruz are looking to get taken back from.
Huh. And have you had any bad experiences recently with them?
I know people that have.
Anything recent?
Yeah, they've been putting needles out that aren't being used by people, and they're making it seem like they are, but they're not.
Is this a first-hand report, or you actually got this from somebody else?
I've seen some myself through Downtown Streets Team, and a friend of mine that works in Downtown Streets Team as well has seen it.
Okay. And we've been talking with, if you want to say.
No, I don't want to say.
Thank you.
And I've heard this report before. I haven't given it a lot of credence because I've never actually had a conversation with someone who actually saw these needles being deposited. But I did have that experience today talking at the Thanksgiving meal, and I will be playing that guy's account. Again, not sure if we can put it on tonight, but it should be coming up on Sunday when I do a longer show starting at 9:30 in the morning.
And we're talking with
Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz Full-Timers.
Go ahead, Julie.
I just got an email back from Sarah Carville with the California Coastal Commission about the coastal zone map that you talked about.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm going to forward that to you. Apparently, they've got some a map that might have different layers that we can look at street names
and see if they're improperly posting no parking signs.
Or get an idea of what the streets are in the coastal zone. And then Sarah Carville said, I did not need to do the research myself, that they have people checking into it. So I just need a copy of that formal letter from the Coastal Commission to the city. And then I think that we can proceed from there. So we're just kind of like in a holding pattern right now.
We've been talking with
Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz Full-Timers on Facebook. Thank you.
And this, of course, goes back to the attempt of the city to criminalize RVs all over the city through former councilwoman, I guess she's still on the council, Rochelle Narayan, held back by the Coastal Commission, which said, no, you can't ban RVs unless, A, you have a place for RVs to go in the coastal zone, and, B, you have to show that there is some actual reason, some criminal problem that requires banning all RVs from parking along the coastal zone by setting up no parking at night stuff. Already this is being done all over Santa Cruz anyway, in limited ways, which may actually be a violation of the coastal zone since it hasn't necessarily been cleared through the Coastal Commission or through the local Coastal Commission. If anybody's interested in pursuing this, Julie Shull is doing that of RV Full-Timers. Check her out on the Facebook page, and give me a call at 423-4833 if you'd like to help with this effort.
Cops, I just got harassed the other night for just being in the daytime, like putting out my sleeping stuff, like a sleeping bag. And the officer was like, you're not allowed to put any sleeping material, else you're considered camping. But I was like, if I did this on the beach, they wouldn't mess with me. Like, if I just put out, like, anything to lay on, they wouldn't mess with me. But since I was laying in the woods, they messed with me.
And what kind of a, was this a Parks and Rec person?
Parks and Rec.
State or city?
It was a state. It was like California National Parks.
Really interesting. And did you advise him that Martin versus Boise, the new court decision, said camping laws have been thrown out?
Oh no, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, it, of course, it, they may ignore it anyway, but still.
Sure, that's awesome.
What's your name?
Dalton.
Thanks, Dalton. This should be on free radio tomorrow.
Cool, thank you.
No, Thursday night.
I have a little meal. I love my Monday night here. It's like family night here at the Little Red Church.
Any music reports from the Avenue?
Yes, we've been playing good music, great music. Every night there out on the Avenue. Maybe we'll play tonight. Happy Thanksgiving.
No,
and Merry Christmas. And Happy New Year all the same.
Sleeping at night undisturbed?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
No property stolen recently?
No. We haven't had problems with theft.
Any large donations from music lovers?
Millions coming.
Ah, well, that's always a
millions.
Likely
millions
story.
Coming.
We've been talking with...
This is Cooper.
Thank you, Cooper.
Thank you.
Anything you want to say?
Happy New Year, Merry Christmas.
Hardy har har.
And Happy Thanksgiving.
And he's the Grinch, actually.
Is it? Oh, Grinch.
Yeah. We're wrapping it all up.
Better give away Christmas. I don't
care enough. Any reports, sir?
Nine.
Well, thank you anyway.
Palestine.
Indeed.
Think about Palestine, folks.
Well, that's a half a world away, son.
Yeah, I know. Keep an eye on Palestine.
The air is better over there than it is over here. You just can't get any meat and you can't get any fresh water.
Yeah.
And you're likely to get shot if you go near the fence, so it's a problem.
Yeah. Don't do that.
It's a good idea. We've been talking, of course, with the evil...
Especially if you're, like, under 14, don't go near the fence.
Well, that's one way of dealing with the youth problem, you know. There is a youth problem.
If there's any youth left...
Well, that's one solution, the final solution.
It is the final solution.
Any reports? Any reports?
I heard that Winter Shelter now is 50 people sign up, and those 50 people get in, and the people that show up don't get to get in.
Now, do you hear this, or you have solid proof, Mr. Popcorn Eater?
I heard that. And that's Ms.
I'm sorry, Ms. Popcorn Eater.
But I've heard that.
Yes.
Is that the truth?
I wish I knew. Becca, if you hear more, let me know.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ma'am. Any reports?
Not in a minute.
Okay. Thank you. Anything you want to say for free radio?
No, not unless I'm with a lawyer concerning the police.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Any street reports?
Yeah.
Nope, got my low housing.
It's always nice to have something over your head.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly when it's cold and smoky.
Oh, I'm loving it every second of my low housing.
Very good. And we've been talking with...
Joe Pace.
Also known as a questionable seller of artwork on occasion.
Yes, they call me the Grim Sweeper because I clean up after the mess.
I see.
And, of course, this whole series of conversations happened in the midst of the Paradise Fire smoke inundation of the area. And it was some people were wearing gas masks or little paper masks. I couldn't fit one over my beard very well, but the interviews go on.
Thank you. Any street reports?
Any what?
Reports from the street you want to pass on?
Reports, no.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you. Any reports?
Steve. I really didn't want to enter the interview. I just want to send you some... I had some pictures of a shakedown on Coral Street today with the cops... Anyway, I don't want to do a long speech. I was going to give you these pictures. You might want them.
You want to describe what's happening in the pictures, or?
Well, the cops are there every morning taking people's sleeping bags and this and that. As you can see, there's Coral Street this morning, totally gone. Where are the homeless people that live there? Where is all their belongings? You know, their sleeping bags.
Did you sleep there last night?
You can see in the picture everything's gone. Nothing there but a cop car, and this is Coral Street. Believe it or not.
Were you there last night?
No, this is this morning. I got to go, so I can do this real quick. I didn't really expect to do it this way. Here you see a sign, Homeless Service Center.
Right.
So you think homeless people will be able to park there, but as you just saw in the picture, you have police cars and tow trucks is what I wanted to show you. They're towing people's, what I call homes, they call vehicles. I didn't plan to do it this way, but here, see, they towed that whole side. See that? And I'll show you the truck.
Yeah.
There is one vehicle parked on Coral Street. It's City of Santa Cruz.
Of course.
They need to park there, not the homeless. Cops need to park there, not the homeless. Here it is again. And there's some, they haven't done this side yet. They're working on this side.
What time are these photos?
I haven't timelined. It was this morning early. I don't know. Like I said, I wasn't prepared for an interview. I just wanted to give you
I understand.
Pictures. Now, here is the gate to the Homeless Service Center, and you'll see all these new expensive cars parking inside the gate. You think homeless people could park inside the gate?
No.
What you have is this overstaffed place, a bunch of fancy cars parking, where homeless people, no parking. And this is a homeless service center. Baffles me. I don't understand it. But anyway, this is it here. So you can see the home, the workers, the staff are getting in. And of course, you can't disrespect the staff. Can't do that. But they can disrespect the homeless. And there's one video. Oh, there's the tow truck thing. Happily doing his job. I told him, I said, you know, you're taking people's homes. He says, this is the wall. They're not supposed to park here. Okay, yeah, right. There he is.
24-hour no parking.
And here is a video of it. If you want to watch it quickly, I got to go.
Yeah, go for it.
I was going to email them to you, but I don't know if you want them or not.
I do.
All right, then I'll have to do that another time.
Yeah,
I got to go.
Do that when, and then when you have
You want to watch this real briefly?
Sure. Go ahead.
You won't be able to hear it.
And we're looking at the video here. Looks like now we're upside down. Now we're right side up.
Sorry about that.
There we go. Okay.
I don't know. But anyway.
Why don't you eat, and I'll talk to you again.
All right.
Asian Orange.
And you say this morning on Pacific Avenue you saw something happen?
I saw Officer Hollywood and his fellow officers arrest a homeless person.
Hollywood is his name, or that's your name for him?
That's our street name for this very humorous officer who yet deals out justice with Judge Dredd willy-nilly. So I just wanted to pass that along because I recommended to the officers that they try to get a referral to an attorney for this young man by asking Robert Norris for an attorney referral. I don't know what attorney you're recommending these days to the latest homeless arrestee.
No recommendations.
Really?
Yeah, there are no attorneys volunteering.
We have a lack of legal representation in our
county. Got it, buddy.
Wow, no wonder the ACLU is hurting.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And because of a time crunch, I'm going to skip some of the music I'd hope to play, although, well, there'll be more of that coming up on Sunday. This is a series of interviews that happened at the Conscience and Action meeting, which is, again, sort of a, in this particular case, it was a homeless-heavy meeting. Unhoused folks dominated the meeting. We were discussing ways of trying to form connections between campsites, perhaps set up another protest camping action, perhaps for November 29th, which is the last day, I guess, when the last person supposedly is going to leave the River Street campground. And we took reports, and these are some of the reports that came in at this Conscience and Action meeting. If you'd like to be a part of the Conscience and Action or HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, come to the Sub Rosa at 11 o'clock on Wednesday, or get in touch with me on the HUF line at 423-HUFF, 423-HUF, 423-4833.
So I'm here at the Conscience and Action meeting. It's around 10 to 12. We're starting late. And it's Thursday, the 21st November, talking with
Greg of the Beach.
And Greg of the Beach, you're not on the beach anymore, Greg, from what I hear.
Well, actually, I still am. I'm just not supposed to be there.
Oh-ho! Very sneaky.
Yeah, it's not that sneaky if you saw how much stuff I have. It's...
Yeah.
Right. I almost hesitated to want to speak on the radio today just because I the last two times I spoke, it satisfied something emotionally of the turmoil that was happening out there, and I'd come here and feel like, oh, okay, I did something. But I really feel that I definitely have to step it up. Everybody does, to actually really make some stuff happen, really dig deep, and I can't just give a report, except I will figure out some action items and really work hard, and that's why I've brought some friends, and some other ones might be dropping in. It's got to really dig deep and really take it to that next level, because I can't be satisfied with just fluffing.
Babbling away.
Yeah, well, oh yeah, and which I do tend to do, but you're so good at...
No, I think you're pretty articulate. We all babble away here, as distinguished from go and do things. So we went to the thing on Thursday, which Bob LaMonica pointed out, may have resulted in, well, I don't know, I think it was something else that resulted in the porta potty out at the Ross campground. I think that didn't have much to do with us necessarily, but we were part of the breaking wave, I think. But anyway, you were had a campground set up on the beach. First, they rousted you from the Cowell Beach side. That's initially prompted you to come to the one of the earlier meetings. Then you came back last week and you said, "Wow, we've been for a week on the main beach side without being harassed. Tents have been up during the day. Everything looks rosy. Even the Parks and Rec comes around and is nice to us." But then suddenly, in comes Chief Mills.
Yeah, and we just had been told, you know, by two different rangers, two different spectrums. With one had, you know, he wasn't really happy that we had so much freedom. Another one had had a wife who'd been in similar homeless circumstances, but they both said the same thing, which is, you know, according to the Boise decision and Chief Mills, statements, that it wasn't going to be prosecuted for such a thing, for survival sleeping. You know,
and yet you were driven away.
Well, I arrived and there was a bunch of uniforms, and they looked senior, not old, just, you know, senior. So no offense, guys, but they were up at the base of the wharf and kind of pointing things out, and I saw that people were moving their tents, and so I just went.
When was this?
When was that, Jane? Was that Sunday or Saturday?
It was over 10 days ago. We've had 11 days and 48 hours notice.
Wait, with when?
Which,
let me think.
When do you want to start?
Well,
with?
It was Sunday.
The guy that lashed me with a belt across my face and across my back.
Oh, that, yeah. Well, there's been some bad stuff. But Chief Mills was out there.
Or the other one that was
Chief Mills, you do need to hear some of these things that she's subjected to, just ridiculously. Yep, exactly. So Chief Mills was out there, and I just said, "Hey, what's going on?" And at first, I saw the four stars, and he said, "Well, we just need to clear the beach, and everybody's got 2 hours." He goes, "Do you have one of those tents?" And I said, "Yeah." And I just pointed out, and he was totally personable and et cetera. But
did he give you a place to go?
Well, first of all, I said, "Well, there's a bunch of people that aren't here, and they're, what's going to happen to their stuff?" And he's like, "Well, we've just got to get rid of anything that's left behind." And
that's not true. If it's valuable, he's obligated to keep it and store it.
No,
he hedged his bets.
No. He's telling the full truth.
Well, no. That's maybe what he's telling them, yeah. But Mills is violating the law if he does that. Our local. Mills is, right, Mills is violating.
What I'm wearing is all I've got left.
Jane, Mills is violating state law when he does that. But, of course, you know, what do? You got to, you wait 2 years, you might get a ruling in a court. Big deal.
Yeah, no, I've got some ideas, some more civil action. But and I don't care if it takes 2 years. He's going to know that it dropped on his desk. Release him, because yeah, basically I had to choose between whether I wanted to debate stuff about the Boise decision or about the practicality and about the contradiction of other.
He'd been there before and given you a different story.
When
did that happen?
Well, he didn't give it to me, but it was somewhere that was published, I think, where he had said that it was not a priority, or it was actually just off the table to be arresting
or ticketing or whatever for
this
camping.
This is the first contact you directly had with Milt?
This is the first time, yeah. Yeah, but he was really nice, charming, he seemed very real. But, I mean, of course, I mean, you know, people, I know bullshit artists.
Real chief of police.
Yeah. And when you have 2 hours to get your stuff off the beach and you realize that three of your friends' tents are unmanned and need to be dealt with, I just instantly kind of like, and honestly just told him, hey, okay, I'm going to help get this done. I'm going to tear those tents down and I'm going to move them because I don't want them torn apart. And I said, I know it's going to be a hassle for you to actually do it because it would have been.
Were you successful in doing that?
Yeah, I did. And he supported. He goes, I mean, because it was like I felt conflicted later because I had to choose between making a statement or saving my stuff.
Now, did anybody take any photos of this action as it was happening?
Somebody has video of him with his words saying all this. We have video. Yep. We have dual video.
You have video of him saying something to the effect that I'm going to take your property and destroy it if you don't leave it right now.
Yeah, but he said it nicely.
Oh, that's nice. Well, you know, we're gonna gas you nicely. That's very nice. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm fully aware of just that the distaste of being treated nicely, but he was able. I was able to carry on. You know, we had a dialogue, and he was listening. And I mean, he did, and he was appreciated the fact that I was trying to meet halfway, and that he could tell the look in my eye that I was like, this isn't cool. But I mean, I wasn't being threatening.
He didn't decide to follow the law or anything, or follow the court's decision. He just went ahead with what he was doing, right?
Yeah, I mean,
you didn't convince him, Greg.
Well, I didn't try to convince him with that. I tried to convince him to allow me to have a staging area where we had more time than 2 hours so that I could drag stuff up onto the
successful
ledge. Yes. And he said, I mean, I hope I don't blow the favor, but he said that that he owes me a favor, which I mean, and I don't mean like that's anything nefarious. I think that
did he give you a place to go?
No. Well, he said, well, he told us to go to Depot Park. And that this is the part that I have an issue with. Well, as soon as everybody got there, then they said you can't be here. So
Mills or the Rangers, who told you?
Mills said go to Depot Park.
And when you got there, who told you to leave?
I didn't go because I was busy.
My tent, my comforter, my everything that I own, apart from what I'm wearing right now, went to the park because the sheriff and the ranger said to leave it and take everything off the beach and go. So the lads, I thought, oh, brilliant, I've got what they nicknamed my puppies. It's because it's all guys and it's only me. And I'm the one that's been...
So how many people, Jane, were with you?
Oh, there was about 22 at least. And my stuff went and they crossed the park and I said, okay, I'm coming across the road. And I went to go under the railroad tracks and they know I don't like to go under there because I'm not from this area and I've been told horrible things about it. And they said, this is where you're going to sleep. I said, okay, I just spent $130 on this Kmart tent. I got it for $80 with my points and with my ex-fiancé in Scotts Valley. I brought it down. The sheriff even has a marking of it and everything was, boom, gone, robbed. So all I've got that I'm sitting in right now with this cup of tea is all I've got left because everything got taken.
Do you know who took it, Jane?
No. Well, I do and I don't.
Do you think it was people who were outside or traveling profiteers?
Well, I just had the council this morning. Now, if they say they pick up stuff, and I know the guy personally, because I actually went, what are you doing? And he goes, oh, I didn't know it was you. And it was actually that bag and that bag. That's why I've only got those two left. I was using them as pillows. I was in, you know, with the kiddie toy boxes on the beach.
Recycle.
Yeah, that's what I was sleeping in. I'm only 5'2". I can fit in there, no problem. So I was able to get in there with the two bags I had left.
Now, this was after you left Depot? Or?
Yeah. And then I came back down. I'm not sitting at the bridge when it's...
How long were you at the Depot Park?
Well, how many times a day when you have to go up and look
for your stuff? How many days would you say you were there?
Oh, no. They do. Dang. Yeah, they walk you back down and they walk you back up. It's the rangers, the highway police, highway patrol, and then it's the actual cops. And then me being from Scots Valley, even though I'm Irish, and they're coming back down. They're like, Jane, you're just too much paperwork, and they don't pick me up. And I go, okay, I got to watch the dog. I got to watch this. I got to do this.
Because they pick up everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm left sitting there going, I can't even go to the library. They are all Irish, and God bless them, man. They are great. But you know what I mean? It's getting a bit out of hand with the way this stuff is going. One of the guys even got took up the other night because he was playing his guitar. One meter... And I went, who's using metric in America? This is a cracker. And he goes, you're 1 meter away from an ATM. So he got a ticket.
Playing guitar without a sign.
Without nothing.
But there was the assumption that if you're...
No, he was right. Just, it was nothing got to do with the guitar. I didn't find out about the guitar till 2 days later. It was actually from the officer himself. He says, Jane, I said, how are you, Patrick? Irony. And I said, what's going on? He goes, you been good? I said, yeah, well, obviously I'm conked out.
So, but let me get back, Jane, to this. How long were you at the Depot Park before you were forced away?
No, I was told to go to the Depot
Park. But after you were there, you've left the Depot Park, right?
Because all my stuff is gone.
Now, so it wasn't the police that told you to leave. It was theft in the area.
Oh, yeah. Everyone
plus
up there
the
is gone. The rangers are flying around. I got told by the police, you're up to an hour allowed to sit on the bench that we drink on in the morning, where I have a can of beer. And then I go for my breakfast. And then I head on to St. Francis. Then I get my stuff done up at the HPHP. And then I'm in the Scots Valley Library. And then I go to my storage unit. And then I go meet my ex-fiancé, and we do stuff at our own.
And we will be following more of this on Sunday. Got to cut this short to get it out on the air. Thanks for listening. If you have reports of what's going on outside, if you have offers, volunteers to help, what's increasingly an emergency crisis situation with police, essentially, and rangers reportedly confiscating lots of property, moving people from one place, essentially, to other places where their property is taken by a different agency, it's not sounding good. Call it 423-4833 if you want to get involved in helping people resist this kind of stuff or at least learn more about it. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Back again 9:30 on Sunday, most likely.
Life is short, it would appear to be. Anyway, the noise.
Thank you, Eric Clapton. Welcome to Uncle Dennis's Cream to the Dregs here on Freak Radio Santa Cruz. 101.3 on your FM dial. We do advise that you remain within about 25-30 feet of our broadcast tower to get the best signal. We are just about ready to start up this old jalopy, as it were, and treat you guys to an evening of eclectic and unexpected rock and roll. Fire it up.